Chapter 17. Taken. Mother's keep is eerily quiet without her. I've always known that most of the people in the keep on any given day were there to be close to the Duchess. But it's unnerving to see it in practice. Doors I am accustomed to seeing open, day or night, now stand closed. Offices that reliably had a light under the door until late in the evening, now dark. The chandeliers are still lit, but without the other lights, they cast deep shadows as we walk through abandoned halls. This has never happened before. Mother will sometimes spend a night or two in another borough, but Mother hasn't left the Great Ward since the day I was born. That she is willing to do so now worries me, no matter how many soldiers and warded children she takes with her. What would happen if she did not return? Would the army of clerks and courtiers return, looking to me for instructions and wages? Or will they stay away, leaving me in an empty keep until I appoint ministers of my own? That's assuming power falls to me. As likely Baron Cutter would step in as regent until I'm older. Creator love Uncle Garrod, but he can't even manage his own house. The general would just sit on the throne and delegate everything to Minister Arthur. That wouldn't be so bad. It would give me space to fall apart. Do you think she's safe? I ask Mika. Your mother is formidable, Mika says, and her warriors are the finest north of Crasia. We have both witnessed what the warded children are capable of, and their power is but a dim reflection of Renna Ambale's. There is always risk in confronting the Alagai, but I have difficulty imagining a threat they cannot overcome. In Evora, they will return triumphant. I know she means to comfort me, but the words that stand out are the qualifiers. There is always a risk. I have difficulty imagining. In Evora. The last one sets me on edge most of all. In Evora literally means ever unwilling. Words meant to remind people that all things, great and small, are subject to the Creator's whim. But if the Creator is all-powerful, why are there demons at all? Why is there suffering? And if he isn't? My throat catches and my legs turn to water. I cover my mouth as I sob, hurrying to one of the velvet benches in the empty hall. I sit, pulling out a kerchief to dab my eyes. Tsst! Nisha snatches the kerchief away. She unstoppers a tiny glass bottle with an extended lip, honed sharp. Skillfully, she uses the lip to scrape the tears streaking my face into the bottle. She moves higher then, catching the next tear right as it leaves my eye, and all those to follow. When I am done, the bottle is full, with scant room even for the stopper. In the lands about Desert Spear, water is worth more than gold, Mika says. There is no greater way to honor a loved one than a sacrifice of that which is most precious. She holds the bottle up to the light so I can see the liquid collected within. There is power in this, sister. It will keep you bound to your mother until she returns. I nod, sniffling. Honor or no, I'm glad Darren wasn't here for that. He's got his own mum to worry about. Doesn't need to see me blubbering over mine. I know the words are a lie, even as I speak them. I might not have noticed how quiet things were, if not for the absence of Selen and Darren. The past week felt like old times, the three of us together again. I wonder if he's worried too, or if he and Selen are kissing in some darkened servant's alcove. I wish that thought didn't bother me. It's not just the fear that they'll break up our easy trio. It's that I can't have the same. It's been weeks, but I can't stop hearing Alona's voice in my head. The time for secrets is over. Grandmum says I should tell everyone, I say. Tell everyone what? Mika asks. That I'm not like other girls, I say. Mika's eyes are carefully neutral. What do you think? I sniff, eyes and nose still wet. I think I'm scared. But maybe it's because I know she's right. Is she? Mika asks. She said it's a ticking clock, I say. Unless I want my husband to unwrap my beedo on my wedding night and find a pecker bigger than his. Beside me, Mika stiffens, sniffing the air. Her hand grips my arm, squeezing painfully as she stands, pulling me up with her. What is it? Mika touches the choker at her throat, and I see its wards come to life. Her next words echo, trapped in a bubble of sound. Lean close to me and walk. Continue to appear distraught. We must attempt to reach the hidden stair in your chambers. She sets a pace designed to move at speed without looking hurried. I feel an adrenaline surge of power in my muscles, but play along, pulling another kerchief to sniffle into and hide my lips as we speak in Mika's bubble. What did you smell? Alamon powder, Mika says. Krasian watchers use it to hide the scent of their sweat. They have attempted to encircle us while you were weeping. You know all that from a whiff of powder? I ask. From the scent, and from what my spear sisters and I would do if we were sent to assassinate a princess. Mika's cold words are a terrifying reminder of who my sister really is. If she is this tense, then things are already dire. Mika slows as we approach the stairs up to my chambers. She cocks her head, pulling us up short. We're surrounded. Find a weapon. I glance back at the darkened door of Mother's First Minister. Lord Arthur has a spear mounted above his desk. Swiftly, Mika says, still guiding my arm as we walk to Arthur's office. Watchers do not fight like other warriors. They are quick and will attempt to dazzle you with theatrics to hide their true attacks. Do not be fooled. If they throw a handful of powder at you, shut your eyes tight and hold your breath for as long as you can. Find a damp cloth to filter it. Spit on your kerchief if you need to. It's all I can do to keep my hands from shaking, at the casual way Mika describes the men coming to kill us. Arthur's office door is locked, but over the years, Selin and I have learned how to slip almost every door in the keep. Lord Arthur's has a loose jamb. A little pressure in the right place and a heavy shoulder are enough to pop it open. I breathe a sigh of relief when I see the short fencing spear still hanging above the First Minister's desk. I rush over and snatch it from the wall, but the weapon, barely more than half as long as the spear I carried on the Borough Tor, feels clumsy in my hands. Stabbing at Corlings with a long infantry spear is one thing. Facing off against a trained spear fencer is another. There were no lessons in spear work at Gatherer's University, and Mika has refused to teach weapons until I master hand-to-hand. You take it, I push the weapon at Mika. I have other weapons. Mika reaches into her robe, pulling out a palm-sized triangle of sharpened glass. Use the spear defensively. If it becomes a burden, fight with your hands. Surrender instead, a voice says in Krasian, though I cannot place the accent through the muffle of a night veil. You will not be harmed. A man appears from the shadows deep in the room. Was he waiting for us? How did he know? I'm relieved to see he carries no spear, just a 6-foot wooden ladder, banded with warded steel. It looks awkward, more tool than weapon. A window slides open, and another watcher enters, pulling his ladder in after him. Mika and I back slowly toward the door to the hall, but it opens, and a third warrior enters. All are clad in black sharum robes and sandals wrapped in black silk. Their black turbans and veils hide all but their eyes, darkened with coal. Nanji. Mika lifts her veil to spit on the floor. Former watcher tribe of the Maja. They swore fealty to the Skull Throne when the Maja abandoned the Deliverer's army and returned to the desert. Your Nanji half-brother swore fealty to the Skull Throne, the watcher corrects. After he murdered our Damaji and stole the Black Turban. And so you serve the Maja still, Mika says. The watcher does not reply, nudging his ladder in our direction. Surrender. I will not offer it a third time. He's arrogant. He doesn't expect a pair of spoiled princesses to put up a fight. There are only three of them, I whisper. We can win this. Perhaps. Mika appraises the men coldly. There is no warning as they attack. All three men charge at once, swinging ladders off their shoulders. Mika flicks a throwing glass at one, but he puts his ladder into a spin, and there is a thunk as the glass embeds harmlessly in the wood. Another ladder cuts between us, and I instinctively dodge aside, realizing too late the intent to split us apart. Hold nothing back, Mika cries, as two of the warriors begin circling her, ladders whirling to box her in. I focus instead on the one closing on me, the watcher who offered us a chance to surrender. He swings his ladder, and I nimbly slip to the side, feet light and balanced beneath my wide skirts. I attempt to counter, but he reverses too fast for me to follow, rolling the ladder across his shoulders to come at me from the other direction. I raise Arthur's spear in time to block, but contact is jarring, the thick ladder knocking me back a step. Before I can recover, the ladder spins again, coming in at a third angle. I move to block, but I am not quick enough, and it clubs me full across the face. There's an explosion of sound and light inside my head, like a round of Mother's Festival flame work. My ears are ringing as I hit the floor, breath knocked from my lungs. I taste blood, and feel loose teeth as I grind them together. Get up. Mika is embroiled in her own fight, but I hear her lesson in my head. Dodges and parries are less important than learning to recover when struck. The watcher thrusts his ladder down, meaning to pin me between the side rails and put the lowest rung into my throat. I roll aside just in time, kicking at his legs. He skitters out of reach, giving me a second to spring back to my feet. He moves back in immediately, but this time I refuse to give ground, stepping in with quick thrusts of my spear. These he parries, but the ladder is less suited to defending against such a light weapon. I wait until it is out of alignment and lunge, meaning to drive the point through the man's chest. The watcher rolls aside, and as my spear thrusts between the rungs of his ladder, I realize he drew me in purposely. With a twist, he catches my weapon fast, and I am not quick enough to let go. I'm yanked forward into a kick that hits me in the chest like a woodcutter's sledge. There is a shriek of pain across my back as I slam into the edge of Arthur's heavy goldwork desk. For a moment, my whole body goes numb, but I grit my teeth, hands groping at the desk, hoping to find a letter opener, a bottle of ink, anything I can throw or use as a weapon. But the First Minister is fastidious, leaving no clutter in an office closed for the night. I grab the blotter, flinging it at the watcher as he closes back in. It buys me a second to shove off the desk, just in time to avoid another blow from the ladder. I assume Sharusark's stance, probing with kicks and punches, watching the way the watcher spins his ladder to parry them. There are only so many ways to keep the ladder in motion in such a cramped space, and the next time it comes along a predictable path, I reach out to take hold of a rung, meaning to pull the watcher into a kick of my own. Instead, the ladder reverses direction mid-swing. I follow it with my gaze, turning my head right into a fistful of thrown dust. I snap my eyes shut, but they're already burning. I choked, trying not to inhale as my lungs seize. The blows come quickly. A swing of the ladder to the head that opens my mouth in a reflexive gasp. The dust in the air is dissipating, but it's enough to set me coughing even as the ladder comes up into my stomach, blowing the breath back out and doubling me over. Another cracks across my already sore back, and I slam hard into the floor. The watcher drives his knees into my shoulder blades, pinning me. He puts my head between the rungs of his ladder and pulls. I arch my back, but pinned, I can't stop him from choking me with the sidebar. I pull helplessly against the ladder, but the watcher has all the leverage, and even with my strength, I can't loosen the hold. I open my stinging eyes and see Mika fighting hard against her two foes. The glass knives are almost invisible in her fast hands. Her fingers are slipped into protective holes on the handles, raised knuckles of warded glass adding power to her punches. But where one Nanji ladder fighter was overwhelming to me, it is terrifying to watch two of them working in unison. With their greater reach, even Mika is not quick enough to strike at them effectively. She parries and dodges most of the blows, but a few glance off her, keeping her on the defensive. Jewelry pulses with magic about her body, making her faster, stronger, but the watchers seem similarly equipped, negating the advantage. One of the spinning ladders hooks Mika's ankle and she stumbles right into a swing from the other warrior. It looks like a telling blow, but then Mika twists out of the way and I realize she guided the men on purpose. She grabs a ladder rung and pulls, straightening the warrior's arm as she delivers a quick punch to his elbow with her glass knuckles. With an audible pop, the joint hyperextends through the ladder rungs, and the watcher, silent until now, lets out a grunt of pain. "Your sister fights well for a woman," the watcher holding me says. "Had you been her equal, you might have had a chance." Mika whirls from the crippling blow to catch the other watcher's swinging ladder in a cross of her knives. She heaves upward and delivers a push kick that knocks the man back. She lunges, knife poised to end the threat. But she stumbles, a knife buried in the back of her knee. Incredibly, the man she crippled is back in the fight. One arm hangs limp, but the other holds a collapsible baton that cracks across the back of my sister's headscarf. The watcher kicks her feet from under her and scissors his legs around her throat, squeezing. Mika stabs at him, but the other watcher has recovered and pins her arms with his ladder, holding it in place with his knees to free his hands for pummeling. Mika continues to struggle for a time, but her movements grow slower and weaker with each passing moment. I wonder if they mean to kill her. I pull at the rung choking me enough to croak, "Stop." "Surrender was offered and refused," the watcher tells me. "Please," I gasp. The pressure eases just a bit. "What will you do to save your sister?" I look to the other men, still pinning and beating Mika, though her body lies limp, convulsing only with the impact of each blow. "Anything," I whisper. The man pinning me gives a hiss, and the others cease their attack, drawing back. If Mika was faking, now would be the time for her to strike. When she doesn't, I fear the worst. The men pull stout cords from their belts, binding her arms and legs. I feel a loop of cord around my own legs and don't resist as it pulls tight. When the knots are finished, I flex experimentally. The cord is tough, wrapped many times and tight. I don't think I can break it. "I want..." My words are cut off as the watcher slams my head into the floor. "This is not a negotiation, girl. Obey, or we will kill your sister here and now." One of the watchers takes a knife from his belt, holding it to Mika's throat, while the other binds his injured arm. I am hauled up and sat at Lord Arthur's desk, a parchment placed in front of me. Somehow, it is written in my own hand. An apology and weak explanation as to why I feel the need to disobey Mother's command and follow her into the mountains. They must have gotten hold of some letters of mine, because even the phrasing is my own. "Sign," the watcher hisses, pushing a pen into my hands. I glance again at Mika, blade to her throat, and comply. The moment I'm done, the pen is snatched away. My arms are pulled roughly behind me and bound tight. A rag is shoved in my mouth and another tied around my head to hold it in place. The cloth is soaked in some chemical, fumy and disorienting. They pull a hood over my head and everything goes dark. I feel dizzy and nauseous as my arms are looped through the rungs and bound tight to the watcher's ladder. He hooks my legs and binds my ankles to a lower rung, then hefts the whole thing onto his shoulders, still managing to move at speed as he hauls me out of Arthur's office window. I feel the wind blowing against me as the watcher climbs to the roof. I am bound too tight to struggle. But even so, I tense, afraid to make a move that might throw the man off balance and plummet us to our deaths on the cobbles below. I bounce to the smooth beat of the watcher's footfalls as he runs along the rooftops. But I hear nothing. Not even wind. We are behind a veil of silence, much like the one cast by Mika's choker. I'm desperate to know what happened to her. Do the other men run beside us in their own envelopes of silence? Did they take Mika with them? Is she still alive? I feel the watcher drop low and twist, and suddenly I am falling. It stops abruptly. Then his feet kick off hard, and we drop again, until the watcher catches something on the adjacent wall, again arresting our fall before he drops the remaining way to the ground. Years of sneaking around the rooftops with Darren and Selen is enough for me to guess where we are. The 30-foot drop into Mother's Garden. The adjacent walls are close enough for one to leap from sill to sill on the way down, but only Darren was mad enough to try it. Selen and I regretted the bet the moment he agreed, watching white-knuckled from the roof until he was safely down. The watcher does it with me strung to a ladder on his back. We land lightly on soft soil. During the day, the garden is heavily patrolled. Mother starts and ends every day there, meeting with aides and ministers as she plants, harvests, weeds, and prunes. At night, the place stands empty. The garden has a number of secret exits. I smell roses, and I realize the watchers have found the one that leads to the stables. I'm set down, and my back fetches up against what can only be the keep's east wall. The hood loosens, and I slowly nudge my chin along the cobbles, trying to work it free. To what end, I don't know. I'm still dizzy from the fumes, in no position to fight. The watcher doesn't seem to notice, unbinding me from the ladder with quick efficiency and carrying it away. Free of the restriction, I curl up, catching the edge of the hood with my teeth. I fling my head back. The sudden motion makes bile rise in my throat, but the hood flies high enough for me to see. I swallow sour vomit as I look around. Mika lies next to me in the shadow of the wall. She is similarly bound and hooded. I can hear her breath, weak and fluttering. I wonder if they intend to keep her alive, or if they are just removing a body to delay questions. If I ran off, Mika would surely follow. I rub my face against the cobbles, working free the gag as the three watchers gather at the wall, marrying the ends of their 6-foot ladders together. The result is still short of the 30-foot wall, but they seem unconcerned, bracing it as one of the men nimbly runs up, standing balanced against the wall on the top rung. A second watcher follows, clambering over his fellow like another set of ladder rungs to stand on the first one's shoulders. At last, the leader returns to us, tugging the hood back over my face. Do that again, and I will put out your sister's eyes. He picks me up, easily slinging me over his shoulders. He runs up the ladders and scrambles over his accomplices. I am thankful for the hood as he leaps from the last man's shoulders, flying just high enough to catch the wall's lip. I thought myself numb, but a chill of fear finds me as we swing for a moment in empty air before he pulls us up and lays me on the wall top. What did you do to the guards? No less than they deserve for being so lax, the man murmurs. They were half drunk even before we drugged their goblets. They will wake with headaches before their shifts end, and never dare admit the lapse when put to the question. And if they are discovered in a drugged sleep, he chuckles, is not Princess Olive known for such tactics? It will be as if my brothers and I were never here. Bound to the ladder across the watcher's back, I feel the breeze on my clothes. The vibration as his legs propel us down the streets of the capital. The arrest as he pulls to a stop here and there, no doubt to evade discovery. But I hear nothing. After a time, we pause, and the ladder is taken off his shoulder and lashed to a horse. The drugs finally take hold, and I am thankful as I lose consciousness amid the jolting of the horse's gallop. I wake as the animal dances to a halt. The pounding in my head suggests I was out for some time, but it's not yet dawn. I am untied from the ladder, but my bound limbs are numb. I fall, shaking and sick, like a shot deer that hasn't yet had the sense to die. A pair of strong arms catch me, and I am carried several steps to a wooden stair. The doorway is small, and the wood floor creaks under our weight. A wagon?
You have done well, brothers.
The voice is not that of the watcher who captured me. Even muffled by the hood, it is familiar.
Glory to Maja, the watcher says. Glory to Nanji.
My hood is snatched away, and my half-brother, Irivan, meets my eyes.
Apologies, little sister. We are all caught in an Evera.
I try to spit in his face, but Irivan is quick. He backhands me so hard the spittle is knocked from my mouth to spatter across my cheek. He grabs my chin, forcing me to look at him again.
If you are wise, you will not try such foolishness with the Dharma Ting.
Enough, my son, Belina says from across the compartment, where she kneels with the watcher who captured me at her left hand.
Of course, mother.
Irivan bows and retreats to kneel at his mother's right. You have done well, Kaitamoka, Belina tells the watcher. The Dharma Ting honors me, Tamoka bows, putting his hands on the floor and lowering his face to them. But his hard eyes never leave mine. Irivan wraps his knuckles against the wall, and the wagon lurches into motion. I glance around, but Mika is nowhere to be seen. Ooh, with the last of my spittle gone, the word chokes off before I get far. My throat feels like a thorn bush as I clear it and draw new breath.
Where is my sister?
Safe, Belina inclines her head, so long as you remain compliant. Compliant? Who in the core does she think she is?
When my mother hears,
we will be half a world away, Belina cuts in. The Duchess of Hollow's reach is great, but even she does not have the strength to cross the sands and challenge Desert Spear.
I wouldn't be so sure, I growl. But if not her, my father surely does.
Indeed, Belina nods, but I know my husband better than you, girl. The betrayal of the Maja eats at him even now. He will not bring an army to our gates over you. I have foreseen it. She rises, coming over to me. You should be proud. Your marriage will restore peace between the tribes and see your brother raised to first warrior of Desert Spear. Proud to be taken a slave, I ask. Belina hisses gently. Marriage is hardly that. Your betrothed is heir to the throne of Desert Spear. As his Jiwa Ka, you will live in wealth and luxury.
As a prisoner, I say.
We are all prisoners, Belina says. Only in heaven are we truly free. It is up to you if you wish to be captive in luxury or bound on the floor. I bite my lip, considering. I'm in no condition to attempt escape, and that's not likely to improve if I remain bound.
Luxury.
Wise, Belina congratulates me. She slides her Hanzar from its sheath at her belt, severing the cord behind my arms and legs. Immediately I retreat until I fetch up against the back of the wagon, rubbing my limbs to restore my circulation. Belina does not pursue, opening a cloth holding my possessions, rings and bracelets and jeweled earrings.
Baubles, she sneers.
Not a horror stone among them. No wonder Kaitamoka and his men took you so easily. She grunts as she finds the tear bottle.
Whose tears are these?
My Aunt Selen's, I lie. I know enough of horror magic to know tears are second only to blood as a component for spells and foretelling. Billina eyes me doubtfully, but she doesn't press. Instead, she runs a finger over the armlet I bought from Achman. She pulls free the little spear, opening the hinge. I'm so pleased you were drawn to this. The dice were unclear if you would choose the box, the earrings, or the Hansar. I go cold at the words. Mika was right. The Maja in the marketplace at Pump Forge were spies. No doubt I am in one of their wagons right now. I meet Belina's eyes again, and this time I recognize her. Fashvar. Achman's Jiwa Ka. I am such a fool. Belina nods. Hold her. As one, Iravan and Tomoka move forward, grabbing my limbs and pinning me as Belina closes the armlet around my biceps again. She sets the little spear back in place and presses her thumb into the sharp tip. Blood wells for a moment and then is sucked away. The clear gemstone turns red. As soon as it is done, the three of them retreat, kneeling at the far end of the wagon like tenders at prayer. That is a bloodlock, Belina says. Now that it's sealed, only my blood can open it. She reaches into her horror pouch, producing a tiny replica of the warded band, complete with the spear, shield, and stone. She squeezes the ring in her fingers, and my armlet responds, constricting to dig deep into my biceps. I scream at the intense shock of pain, but then the Dharmating eases off the pressure. The armlet will lead me to you, no matter where you run, Belina whispers. And if you disobey... She squeezes the tiny band again, and the armlet shrinks so tight I fear my arm will break. I collapse on the floor, twitching and howling, and the longer it goes on, the more I fear she means to cripple me, here and now. Please, I scream. Please stop. A sob escapes my lips. Oh, Creator, please. At last, Belina relents. I remain on the floor, shuddering with fear and pain. She kneels beside me, taking my arm and gently massaging the muscle to restore circulation, even as she works her fingers against convergence points to numb the pain. I stare at her, and she turns to meet my eyes. Do we understand each other, princess? I nod, numbly. Good. Belina retreats again. I trust you will not require additional reminders as we take you to your future husband. Kai Tomoka clears his throat, a sound so quiet one might miss it if one wasn't paying attention. But Belina turns to him immediately. Tomoka puts his hands on the floor and bows again, still staring at me. Dharmating, there is something my men overheard. For a moment, I don't understand. But then I remember my last words to Mika before she caught their scent. Belina leans for Tomoka to whisper in her ear. She keeps the famed Dharmating serenity. But her reaction is immediate, touching a gem on the circlet of warded coins above her brow. I see the wards activate, giving her sight much like mother's spectacles. I shift uncomfortably as her eyes flick down for just a moment. Tsst! Mother? Iravan asks. What is it? Inevera was right. To fear the daughter of Ernie, Belina whispers. Arman's Greenland Heza, the Duchess of Hollow, has been hiding a prince.